Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
Great guy. He's an intelligent guy. He's got a high IQ. He's a chemist. He's crafty. He comes up with all kinds of great ideas. Well, you know what he isn't? He's not a structural engineer. And I know this because on more than one occasion, the projects that we've done together, frankly, they failed. They failed because we had a difference of opinions on how something should go together. But since neither one of us are qualified to be structural engineers, we just pick one of those two ways. We come up with a plan and we make it happen and later realize, well, we should have done it the other way or a different way. I mean, that's true in every business. Unless you've got the best of the best rocket scientists or experts on your team, there's always going to be a time when your plan fails. What are you going to do when that happens? That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and I can tell you there have been many a times that I had what I thought was a perfectly solid plan. Well crafted, well constructed. We've thought through every particular angle. Everything that could go wrong, we've already figured it out. We know what it's going to be. Now, whether that's launching your business and you have an idea where you're going to sell and what you're going to sell, just recently during the eclipse, one of my boys decided, hey, I'm going to go set up on the side of the road where all these other merchandise people set up and where all the vendor booths are set up, and I'm going to sell Eclipse sunglasses. $5, no big deal, right? Got 500 of them, got plenty to sell. There should be some money to make there. Until you set up in a little town where the Chamber of Commerce and the Visitors Bureau are giving them away to people, and the local radio station, yep, giving them away. They all have their own. They're so cheap, they can just give them away. Well, it's hard to sell when the same product is free. Not a strong business plan. Now, 3 miles further down the road in another little town where they weren't giving them away, maybe you could have made $5. But you're not going to make any money when everybody's giving them away. Not a good business plan. Well, how many people have crafted a business plan? They've put together the whole product set. They know exactly what the price point's going to be and who the ideal customer is going to be and how they're going to put together the product and manufacture it and get it to distribution. And then all of a sudden you get it out there and people look at it and go, what is that? What does it do? How does it work? Why would I want it? Why don't I just use this one that does exactly the same thing as that one for half the price? And it's amazing how far down the road one can go when ego and narcissism are the driving characteristics of the leader. Not flexibility, not agility, not deference, not the ability to look at themselves and go, maybe I'm wrong. All right, chances are I've done my homework, I've done my research, I know what I'm talking about. But there's also a chance that somebody's done a little more research, done a little more homework, or maybe even they've even headed out in this direction before and they've come back because it wasn't as good a place as we thought. You know, one of the stories in my first book, Live a More Excellent Life, talks about when I came over a hill in the dark. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And as I came over the hill, I see this just dark spot in the highway. I mean, it was like an eerie black hole in the highway. Like there was nothing there. I mean, it wasn't even the reflection of the highway. It was just like nothing was there. It was so bizarre, like a big hole. But just before I got to that, there were these little white crosses driven into the grass. And all those white crosses lined up as my headlights lit up on them on my motorcycle. I thought, what an interesting place in the middle of nowhere to have multiple white crosses. Usually that's a sign that someone maybe lost their life in this place on this highway. And I didn't put two and two together fast enough to realize that what looked like a black hole, just absence of anything in the middle of the road, might be an indication of something else. And then at the last second, two glaring brake lights came on in this hulk of a van sitting in the middle of the road. And I locked up my brakes and came to a stop about 2 feet from hitting it. And as the wind noise and exhaust noise of my bike began to fade away, I could see This was a van parked in the middle of the highway. I'm thinking, what kind of stupid choice was that? But then I also realized I'm seeing off to the left of the van just little tiny flashes. And as I lean around, I realize those little flashes are actually the park lights of a car on the other side of the road. And between us, an old rusty train clacking away. The train is so long, the engine can't even be heard. The only thing you can hear now is as the train ran over the seams of the steel rails. Now, if it hadn't been for that van stepping on their brakes and lighting up the night with their brake lights, I probably would have smashed right into the side of that train, because by the time I would have seen that rusty train, that absence of light reflecting, my brain wouldn't have been able to figure out exactly what it was. I had a plan. I was just cruising down the highway, singing along with the radio. I was good to go. Until a train decided to park itself, well, for all intents and purposes, a 20-mile-long train taking up the entire roadway. No crossing arms, no blinking lights, no bing, 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 nothing. Just a train on a road in the dark. Now, at what point was I supposed to decide it's a bad idea to cruise down this hill at highway speed, not taking any precautions? Well, probably about the time I saw the first white cross. Yeah. See, those are there for a reason. They're indicators. Like a warning light on your dash. You probably should pay attention. Now, I'm going to ask you this. In your business, in your relationships, in your own research, have you come across the white crosses, if you will, of potential failure? Those relationships that all the warning signs are going off that you can't trust this person and yet you continue to stay around them? All the mistakes that have been made in your life and in theirs, they're pretty evident. They're glaring. They're like the little white crosses glowing in the dark, and you're thinking, I don't see that. I'm not paying that much attention to that. And then the next thing that happens is devastating, catastrophic, potentially relationship ending, career ending, business ending, life ending, because you didn't pay any attention. I was standing in the parking lot at my friend's warehouse where we'd been working on a project together. He said, I'm just going to run to town, run a couple of errands. I'll be back. When I get back, we'll do X, Y, and Z in the next phase of our process. Well, we were working on our mobile podcast booth, the mobile studio that we use now for Story Power TV. And it has these three giant plates of 1-inch thick Lexan. Each one of them weighs probably 200, 225 pounds. Each section. There's three of them because the whole window is 10 feet long and 6 feet high. And we had seamed them together, and we had put them in the frame, and we had locked in place the bottom part of the frame on a piano hinge. We had put in place the frame up the sides, but we hadn't quite screwed it all in yet. We had a steel plate across the top, and in his assessment, that steel plate with 20 rivets in it holding this close to 700 pounds of Lexan was going to be sufficient to keep it in there. And I said, I really think we should have extended the steel plates out far enough to have like tabs on either side with some 2-inch bolts in it. Because we're not just talking about the weight of the window while it's sitting still, but what if the doors are open on the other side, the wind blows through? What if we're driving down the highway and the lift coming around the trailer, the wind creates a suction like it does in the bed of your truck when things start to swirl around? What if that happens on the side of the trailer where the windows are and it sucks the windows out and they fall on somebody's car? Because that could be catastrophic. I mean, somebody could get hurt or get dead. And I don't want that to happen, especially while I'm pulling it down the road. And he said, no, it's got 20 rivets. And I'm like, but aren't those aluminum? He said, no, they're steel rivets. And I'm like, really? They make steel rivets? He said, yeah, these are the high-quality industrial ones, and there's 20 of them. I mean, they're spaced out. And so we argued about it, and we yelled about it, and we fought about it, and we left it with rivets. And while he was gone to town, we'd been working on the flooring as well. So he had taken everything out, and we were laying the new vinyl inside, and he left the doors open. And a gust of wind came and blew one of the doors wide open. They're big, giant, 5-foot barn doors, and Both doors blew open, and while I was standing beside the trailer painting the trim around the outside of this window we had just installed, I turned around to grab more paint, and two of those panels fell in the middle of my back. Oh, it left some marks. I don't think they're permanent marks, but it left some marks. Bruises, cuts, scrapes from my hairline to about the middle of my back. And I was standing there like an inverted Spider-Man, trying to hold it up, trying to push it back in. The wind still pushing it from the other side. The weight of it was just more than I can handle. 500 pounds trying to do a back press with it. It was just impossible. Finally, I kind of turned and maneuvered to get myself out of the way and try not to break. This is not cheap stuff. Try not to break this Lexan. I let it down as gently as I could. One fell and cracked anyway, but we were able to use it. But when he came back, I said, you know, I got to show you these pictures. And I couldn't put it back up in there by myself. And so he had to help me put it back up in there, and we tried to re-seam it. And the next thing we did, we put all the bolts down the side, not rivets, bolts. And then we put two giant bolts. They're like an inch in diameter with giant nuts on them on the inside with steel tabs. And there's four of them that hold that window in at the top now. And yeah, that trailer's been up and down the highway many times now. 60, 70 miles an hour. It doesn't bother that trailer at all. We move it around all the time and use it for various events. And people kind of look at it and go, that's an unusual tool, but it does what it does. We have a business plan for it. And when we first bought that trailer, it had a stage on it. And it was a great business plan. It paid for itself probably 20 times over in the first three years that we had it. I mean, it made more money doing events than we paid for it and all the sound equipment in it. And then I watched at an event, a mom put her kid on that stage who was probably 18 months, maybe 2 years old, and then back away to take a picture of her kid on that stage with her cell phone. Now, what does an 18-month-old do when mom backs away? Well, they follow. That baby was half a step from a 50-inch face plant, a height almost three times as tall as the kid. And I said, nope, 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 not no more. And we took the stage off and made it a window instead. Those moments are exactly what I'm talking about when you have a business plan and it doesn't come together the way you want. When you have a plan, a structural plan, an engineering plan, a design plan, a product development plan, a hiring goal, a sales strategy, a marketing tactic, and you put all those things together, you're like, this is genius. It's going to work. I'm going to make millions. And then the Mike Tyson effect kicks in. You know, Mike Tyson's philosophy is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And you can see the number of people who get in the boxing ring with Mike Tyson. Just go back and watch in his heyday in the late 80s. And you see a guy who, he's got punching power that can knock people literally off their feet. A combination that most people, they know it's coming and they can't stop it. Just a dangerous, dangerous fighter. Fought in the ring in his early days with a lot of rage. And people are like, well, what's your plan? He's like, knock his head off. They're like, no, seriously, what's your plan? How do you plan to defeat his strategy? He said, look, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. Most people have no idea how hard Mike Tyson hits until he hits them. And you can see it on their face the first time he hits them. They're like, whoa, where'd that come from? Nobody else hits that hard. It's a big deal. Life does the same thing in your leadership. You have all the strategy and all this plan. You've done all the physics on it. You know exactly how it's going to work. And then you do it. And it doesn't work. You add that extra person to your team because you think that's going to make up the difference. And you realize they're not an accelerator. They're an anchor. They're not helping me move forward. They're slowing me down. Now, I have to tell you, in my life, I wouldn't say I'm impetuous, but I am sometimes a little spontaneous. And for 30 years, I've had one person in my life that's really good about throwing on the brakes going, I don't think so. And it's kind of like the Tim the Toolman Taylor and his friend Al Borland, when Tim would come up with a genius idea and everybody in the audience was like, no, Tim, don't do that. And Al Borland would be like, I don't think so, Tim. And see, I have a Karen. I don't have a Al Borland, but I have a Karen. And my Karen has been here for 30 years. And there are times that I come up with these great ideas. And she's like, no, if you're doing it, you're doing it alone because I'm not going to participate in that. I think one of my best ideas was when we had our kids business and we were entertaining kids every weekend to 500 to 700 kids, sometimes as low as 250, but sometimes as many as 700 kids in one location over a weekend. Well, one of the ways that I loved to market that was to get out in the community during the day, just let people know. We'd hand out flyers, we'd hand out posters. And I found this clown suit, an inflatable clown suit. I had no idea how many people were terrified of clowns. I eventually stopped putting on clown makeup and would just wear the wig and this giant polka-dotted suit. I looked like I was 700 pounds. Well, one day I decided to wear that to the pool. And everybody loved it. Everybody thought it was hilarious. Here's what I didn't think through. If it holds air, probably holds water. If it holds air, it probably holds water. And I went off the diving board in this suit. Yes, I took the blower out. I'm not that silly. But I jumped into the pool where the water was 13 feet deep. And at the bottom of the pool, my clown suit filled up like a sandbag. Water weighs 8 pounds per gallon. That was a heavy suit. And as I got to the top, my deltoids were burning from trying to push myself to the top. I couldn't push off the bottom, not at 13 feet. I couldn't walk far enough holding my breath to get to the shallow end. And when I finally got to the top and got my hands to the rail, I was out of breath, my deltoids were burning, and I was almost in panic mode. And I looked up at this lifeguard who looked like a middle school cheerleader. She might have been 15. She was all of 65 pounds, dripping wet. And she looked at me laughing and said, "I thought you were just clowning around." And all I could say was, "Well, I guess so." Because there's no way in the world that little girl would have pulled me out of the water anyway. I'm not sure she's going to pull me out without the clown suit. That was a bad idea. I don't think my Karen thought through how bad an idea that was. She just thought it was a bad idea to wear the clown suit to the swimming pool, like when I wanted to wear my gorilla suit to the movie theater. She was all hip for going to the movie until I put on my suit, and she's like, "Nope, I am not going. If you're wearing that, I'm staying home." I'm like, "What, are you embarrassed by my suit?" She's like, "No, but sitting in a dark place in a gorilla suit is probably not a good idea." So instead, my daughter dressed as a banana, and we went to Walmart. And we had a blast until somebody who apparently is afraid of gorillas as much as they're afraid of clowns, who'd have thought, called the police on me, and we had a nice little chat. I didn't get a ticket or arrested, but I'm impetuous. I'm spontaneous. I come up with wild ideas. And see, this ability to be agile in business as a leader means sometimes you're going to come up with bad ideas as much as you come up with good ideas. But there's this little thing called deference. It's married to agility. It's married to the idea of being flexible enough to go, "Okay, I was wrong." Or, "That's a better idea." Or, "Maybe I haven't thought it completely through." And instead of taking your plan to the point where you get punched in the mouth and then going, "Oh, that was a bad plan," you begin to look in relationships around you. You look in other research material, other personalities, a board of advisors. Many consultants makes one wise. That doesn't make you wiser, but having all those consultants, that's wise. More people that will speak into your life and go, "Yeah, bad idea." Or, "It's a good idea, but it needs this one tweak." Deference is the ability to change your mind. Agility is the ability to actually do it, to take action on it. So if you have the ability to defer to someone else who has done more research, done more homework, has a plan, the someone who recognized the white crosses before they hit the train, then that skill of deference, that willingness, that characteristic that says I'm open-minded enough to realize I may have a million ideas and 999,000 of them are horrible, dangerous, expensive. They're not going to work out. 1,000 of them, really, really good. That's worth the trouble. That's worth taking a shot and see what's going to happen with it. And still, you need agility. You need to be able to bob and weave and go, "Well, we tried it like that. Let's try it like this." How do we move that perspective just a tiny bit Maybe add a couple more salespeople and a few less marketing people. A new product. Let's try not taking it international until we succeed with it locally. Just some really basic stuff, right? I've worked with many, many clients who, when they first start crafting their stories, they're focused on one long monologue. And I say that's not going to work unless unless you've been to the moon, climbed Mount Everest, been bitten in half by a shark. The odds that your life story is of significant interest to others is pretty slim, honestly. But the tiny stories, the moments that you've lived through where you've learned something unique, or you have a unique spin on some advice maybe they've heard before, but they didn't apply it until now, that's the valuable part of your story. And yet, if you have that you have that valuable part of your story, but you don't have a business plan on the backside of it, you don't have a system that allows you to capture the leads, offer a product, send them on a customer journey where there's going to be a payoff for this new revelation that they've had. Otherwise, you're going to present your story and they're going to go, I'm so glad I know that now. And they're going to walk away and that's it. That's the end. And if you didn't get paid for that presentation, then you're not going to get paid at all. But if you start with the end in mind, you say, well, if this one story is true, how will I help them with that? What will that look like as I provide all the solutions they need? Not just the little white cross, but maybe crossing arms, maybe flashing lights, maybe a ding, 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 that there's a train coming. Anything that helps solve the problem they're about to have. That's a better business strategy. But if you don't have the agility to say, I want to tell my whole story. Okay, you're right. I don't need to tell my whole story. I need to tell this one portion of my story. And I need to tell this one portion of my story with a process for solving the problem. I need a system to manage the information and a system to manage the leads so that I can provide more information to the people who need my help. Now you have an actual business plan. And yet, the Mike Tyson philosophy is still going to apply. You're going to put that business plan out there, you're going to dive into it, and something's going to go wrong. And when it does, that doesn't mean you abandon the business plan. I don't think anybody so far, even when Mike Tyson hits him in the face, runs out of the ring and decides they're going to go play ballet or play tennis. No, some of them get knocked out, but they don't generally quit boxing. They just realize that was an obstacle I wasn't ready for. If your level of deference and your ability to learn agility, to take the punch and move out of the way of it next time, to bob and to weave and to bounce and to fade, when you have learned those things, your ability to move forward in business, your ability to lead others, just continues to grow. If you don't learn those things, then you just keep charging down and you get punched in the face again and again and again and again, and you don't learn the lesson. Well, then your lack of deference and your lack of agility is eventually going to knock you out. Right? Your inability to learn to redirect will destroy your business. And chances are, if you're that stubborn, if you have no agility, no ability to change your strategy and change your plan just a little bit, to maybe even change your character, to learn something new, to learn a new skill set, to set aside your own ego and narcissistic behavior and go, okay, teach me something else. And really mean it. See, when you can do that, when you can go, okay, I was wrong. Yeah, I didn't know that. See, when that window fell on my back, there was zero question in my mind that 20 aluminum rivets will not hold 700 pounds of plexiglass. This is a statistically proven, evidentially proven, not an anecdote, not some notion that I came up with. I haven't done the scientific calculations. I have the scars on my back to prove 20 rivets will not hold 750 pounds of plexiglass. We don't need to argue about this anymore. What we need to do now is move forward with a better idea. That's agility. Deference was the ability to look at that and go, okay, I now know something I didn't know 5 minutes ago. What am I going to do about it? Oh, we could have put it back up there and put 20 rivets back in it and went, well, maybe the rivets failed. Or we could put it back up there and go, well, it was the wind. Well, we can't stop the wind, but if that little wind can do it, what is the highway wind going to do? That could have been a problem. We could have tried the same thing over and over again. What did they call that? Insanity. But instead, we were able to look at it and go, okay, that plan failed. What's the next one? Give me a newer one. Give me a better one. Give me something that makes more sense. Something that won't fail. Nobody knows for certain. Nobody knows for certain. Here's what we do know. If you have the agility and the deference, the ability to say, okay, I'm going to change plans. I'm going to change courses. I'm going to change people. I'm going to change strategies. I'm going to change tactics. I might even change products. I might change what I offer. But I'm not going to be so stubborn to stick with this one thing if it's not working. I'm going to continue to fail and try and fail and try and fail and try until trying becomes success. That's persistence. That's how you win. But you got to be willing to be agile. You got to be willing to defer and go, I thought I had the best plan. Obviously, I was wrong. Somebody give me a better one. And sometimes maturity, agility says you listen for that better plan before you pay the consequences of your own failure. Maybe you should have asked somebody else to start with. If you haven't yet, start now. It's a good idea. Defer your ideas to a group of other people who might give you some better ideas or at least poke holes in the theories that you have. It's a good practice. That's agility. Requires deference. It'll make you a better leader. You should try it. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you.
Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.